Welcome to Behind the Scenes at the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living Tech Extravaganza, the Tech Extravaganza. Let's put it that way. What? You're sorry? You gonna make it up to me? Huh? Huh? You having a good time so far, people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My plan was to not cry today, but Margaret kind of did me in, you know? It's like, is it still okay to wear a mask if you've blown your nose in it? I don't know. And then, no, right. Yeah, and then we have the band back, and oh, Chris Kindler and the Cats. Yeah, so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for all of that. Camera two, I'm hearing. What are you doing back there, Jennifer? Working hard, yeah. Let's give a round of applause for our tech team. Yay! Yeah. For those of you who may have come in late, we're having some issues doing our live stream, and that's what they're working on. You might have seen Brian down there with his little or somebody. Jennifer, was that you with your little cell phone? Brian's cell phone. Okay, yeah, taking pictures of me. I don't know if you guys. Video? You, okay. Yeah, I don't know if you remember the first service that we did. Poor Jennifer, I always make her the butt of this joke. But the first service we did live stream, because we had like 2 minutes to get it together to live stream, I was sideways for the whole time because if you film it the wrong way, it's sideways. So sure, it was very entertaining for many people. Yeah. So, how much longer do you think it might be?
Who's
never been here? But oh, look, yay, a new person, yay, can we applaud you? Yay, good. Welcome. Oh, we're rolling, okay. So, sorry for that little glitch in tech if you were watching online, but here we are, we're back again. Margaret just sang a beautiful song. I hope you got all of that. It was incredible. It was about building a church, growing a church of love and understanding, and boy, howdy, that's what we're doing, because we are in a process of reinvention. And before I get into all of that, I just really, really want to welcome all of you who are here and all of you who are watching online. It just feels so magnificent to have people in the sanctuary again, and I just thank you so much for coming today. Thank you so much for watching, and thank you so much for being that church of love and understanding. You know, the pandemic has been interesting for many of us, and from a church perspective, it's been very interesting to try and follow all the rules and get everything together and do what we need to do. And the other day, I went to a social gathering with some clergy. We could say like a three ministers and a rabbi walked into a patio, like that joke, you know, and we took up our masks because we were all vaccinated, and we ate real food buffet style, and we talked, and we were talking about opening the church, because all of the ministers, I think, are struggling a bit with knowing what to do. The rules are this way one day, and then they're this way the next day, and then they're this way the next day, and we're all trying to figure out what to do. Our church, our center, was the first one to open. In the group of the four of us there, one of them is waiting until September, the others are waiting till June, so they were asking me lots of questions about how we're doing it. And one of the biggest questions was, how do you handle the singing? Because, you know, singing is really taboo right now, according to what the CDC says and the nuances of COVID in church. So I talked about, I am remembering, we sing a song into our masks, we sing quietly into our masks. And then I said, when we have a soloist, we have what we call a spit zone around the soloist. Because, you know, certain soloists project a lot of, you know, particles in the air. And there was this moment of silence where I felt the ministers trying to process what is a spit zone. And then one of them said, I know, it's like Shamu. How do you feel about that, Margaret? Yeah, okay. She's one of the few singers that I could pull the Shamu joke on because she gets it. But, you know, gosh, you got to have a sense of humor about this stuff, right? Yeah. And I think we can all relate to going to SeaWorld and being in the Shamu zone, right, where you get soaking wet. So, you know, if you're sitting over there, you might want to bring a slicker next time, okay? But again, I mean, I felt like Shamu did a beautiful job with her song this morning. And and you know, it leaves me with a question. You know, she's encouraging us. She's saying, we will grow a church of love and understanding, a church of peace. Will we? Will we? You know? Yes, I think so. Yes, absolutely. And I'm looking at the pandemic, as we are trained to do in this denomination, as something that is sent to inspire us to go deeper. And to, the church was magnificent before the pandemic, but let's make it even more magnificent. Let's touch even more lives. Let's reach out and be that place of love and understanding, a mystical center of non-duality where we act upon the call of kindness. And we surrender into boundless grace, moment by moment, breath by breath, every day, so that we can be that truth that we wish to see in the world, that we can be ambassadors of that truth. That's my hope. That's my intention for this church, for this center. It will require something of us. It will definitely require something of us. And I think one of the things that building this church, reinventing this church, will require of us is faith. The word faith was not said explicitly in the Thich Nhat Hanh reading that Hugh did, but it certainly was implied that the farmers have faith. You know, to recap the reading, the people go to Dordogne, region of France, where Plum Village is, where Brother Thich Nhat Hanh lives, and they go there, and they were told that there are lots of sunflowers, but sometimes, depending on the time of the year, there are not lots of sunflowers, but the farmers can see the sunflowers. Because the farmers have planted the seeds, and the farmers have cultivated the soil, and the farmers have faith in the laws of nature. Can we be the same? Can we see the complete church, which is never complete, that is always growing, and know that we're planting the seeds now to create that center? There's a definition of faith that I heard recently that I loved, and it's by Adyashanti, who is he doesn't really call himself a Zen teacher, he's an American, but he says he's much more of a non-dual teacher. And he says that faith is the withholding of conclusions so that we can allow what is to emerge. I'm going to phrase that in a slightly different way. Faith is the withholding of conclusions so that we can allow grace to emerge. The grace of spirit that is always upon us. This is going to seem like a bit of a non sequitur, but I'm rather famous for that, I think. But, you know, I take little things seriously. And for the last couple of weeks, as we've been talking about reopening and reinventing the center and seeing what it is we can be, I have been obsessed with cleaning the light fixtures in my home. And it's such an interesting phenomenon. You climb up on a ladder. First, you have to overcome the resistance to doing it. You climb up on a ladder. You pull down the light fixture. You unscrew it or do whatever you need to do. You try not to drop it, you know. And then you take it down, and it's filled with dirt from, I don't know, the 50s or so. It's the last time it was cleaned. It's filled with dead bugs, right? Why do they do that, those little buggies? Sure, they want to live. Anyway, then you clean it off and you put it back up, and the whole room changes. The whole room changes. And could it be that's similar to the idea of jumping to conclusions, that when we impose our conclusions, our relative conclusions on a reality, that it's like debris and dead bugs and dust that's in a light fixture, and as soon as you clean away all of that, the light can shine a lot brighter. And aren't we quick to jump to conclusions? Who here among us is not quick to jump to conclusions? Bernie, you're lying. Look at Bernie lying over there, and Jennifer, she's lying in the back. Yeah. Not literally lying, but yeah. Because it's just what we do, isn't it? We jump to conclusions. And, you know, I was thinking about this. It's like jumping to conclusions is not all that bad or abnormal. But the thing is that we jump there and then we stay there. We get stuck there. I was trying to think of a good metaphor for getting stuck, and you know that you can do a YouTube video, you can Google on YouTube and say videos of people who have gotten stuck. My very favorite was like a 20-year-old woman who was stuck in like a booster seat for a child in a restaurant, and the paramedics came up, you know, they're going to save her, and the first thing she said was, "Don't ask me why I'm in this booster seat." They got her out eventually. I'm sure some of us have been stuck in cobwebs or stuck in wet concrete, not cement, but concrete, as I've been told that we have to call it now. And politically correct. But you know, we've all been stuck in something, and that's how we are with our conclusions. Our conclusions bind us. They don't bind us if we know that they're just conclusions, but the problem is that we jump to the conclusion and then we make that as gospel. We make that as the truth. We make that as reality. We inform ourselves that this is the way things are. And in my experience, particularly in this past year, the way that I think things are hardly ever the way things are. Hardly ever. Again, I keep asking this question about the pandemic. How many of us thought, oh yeah, pandemic, schmandemic, right? How many of you thought pandemic, schmandemic, right? 6 weeks, we're done. We'll be back. It'll be fine. And here it is over a year later, and we're getting better, knock on piano, but we're getting better, and yet we're still experiencing the effects of this pandemic that here seems to be resolving a bit, but then there are other countries. You know, we have this global consciousness here where we want to embrace the entire world, and there are other countries that are struggling awfully. You know, so our conclusion about that, my conclusion about that, was not completely accurate, and I think really that my conclusion, perhaps our conclusion about just about everything, is not completely accurate. We're always making stuff up and saying that it's the truth, when really it is just our perspective about the way things should be rather than the way things are. And the truth is, what I think the truth is, again, I'm making stuff up here too. I'm just scratching at the surface of the truth the best I can. I heard a thing from James Finley the other day, is that a mystical teacher knows that they understand very little. A mystical teacher understands that they understand very little. Okay? But we're doing the best we can to peel back the layers and to understand a little bit more about this thing called existence, this thing called absolute reality. And you know, I know that I trust completely, I have faith that the light that wants to come in is so much better than my conclusion. So I can clear away that conclusion. Clear away that conclusion, just as I would clear the dust and the bugs from a light fixture, and allow that light to shine and guide me as to what the next steps are. And when I say I mean we. You know, an example of this that I encountered recently about how we make conclusions that has to do with church and COVID. You know, occasionally I get, I get criticized. Sorry, God. I get criticized. We get criticized. The leadership gets criticized for decisions that have been made. You know, and it's really a microcosm of the greater society that is so polarized about everything, about masks and vaccines and whether or not we should gather and blah 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 blah. And so, you know, I've heard this rumor that, okay, we're building this church of love and understanding. And in the reading that Hugh did about Thich Nhat Hanh, it said that one of the conditions for growth and for the sunflowers blooming and for our center blooming, you know, metaphorically, is warmth. And I've heard people say, well, how can we possibly express warmth when we're wearing masks and we have to stay 6 feet apart? How can we possibly express warmth when we have to wear masks and we have to stay 6 feet apart? I'm going to change warmth to love. How can we possibly express love when we have to wear masks and stay 6 feet apart? But let me ask you, let me turn into Bill Hadris for just a moment and ask a lot of questions, as he did in his youth message. Is your love greater than a mask? Yeah, that's good. Is your love greater than 6 feet? Yes. Is your love greater than not physically being here, physically being present here? Yes. Is your love greater than not necessarily be able to sing all of the songs that we used to sing in church?
Yeah.
Margaret's the only one I'm really, everyone's going, yeah. And we may not necessarily like it, right? We may not necessarily like it, but it's what is right now. And one of the beauties of what is right now is that we get to respond creatively. You know, I have this friend, my friend Sejong, who is I've talked about her before. She is just a mixture of so many different pieces. She's the daughter of two Christian ministers who grew up in Korea. She's Korean, and she you know, saw the love that her parents poured into the church, and then she went to college and became an atheist and a feminist, and then she married a Catholic and she became a Catholic, but she's still a feminist, but she's pro-life because she's a Catholic, and she says she just doesn't fit in anywhere. People will kick her out of whatever group she's in because she just doesn't fit in anywhere, and I just love her so much. And one of the things that she said about wearing masks and being six feet apart is, you know, what are you going to fill your 6 feet with? It's 6 feet of empty space, but could it be 6 feet of compassion around you, like a gigantic hula hoop? You know how I love a hula hoop. I wish I had it here today. This would have been a good Sunday for hula hooping. You got 6 feet of compassion around you. 6 feet of welcoming around you, 6 feet of gratitude around you, 6 feet of appreciation around you, 6 feet of loving kindness around you. What would that be like? You know, I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, I spoke about it up here. I spoke about my shortcomings, which I have many, and I speak of frequently. You're all probably sick about hearing how messed up I am. But I spoke about being in Trader Joe's, the one down on Victoria where they have a little hibiscus where you're supposed to stand to be 6 feet apart. And I would get so judgmental if people would not be standing on their hibiscus. It ruined my shopping experience because that person over there was not standing on his hibiscus. And then I couldn't really stand on my hibiscus to stay 6 feet apart. So I was a sinner too, man. You know? But what if instead of filling that 6 feet with judgment, I filled it with compassion? It's a beautiful, beautiful practice that will keep us whole, that will keep us sane, that will grow this church of love and understanding. You know? So in all of the rigors of reopening and making decisions and all of that stuff, you know, I turned back to a teacher that I haven't followed for a while, but I really think she's so wise. I know some of you practice her teaching, and that's Esther Hicks. How many of you know who Esther Hicks is? Oh, look, so many of you know who Esther Hicks is. Yes, wonderful. So she channels an entity called Abraham, and I think it's more than one entity because she often refers to them as we. And her whole thing is about the law of attraction, which I understand a lot better now after a year of pandemic and a year of studying Christian mysticism. Being shut down in a pandemic, you got to do something. You know, you do all the jigsaw puzzles with animals on them, and then, okay, I might as well turn to Christian mysticism and read a little, you know, whatever. But I love the way that she talks about how to navigate life, and it is so much like that Ajahshanti thing about how you jump to conclusions, and the way to bring forth greater love and light in your life is to withhold the conclusions and just allow what is to be and allow that to guide you to your next right step. You know, she tells this wonderful story about it's about, you know, manifesting what somebody wanted for her wedding. This woman's husband came up and stood up in one of her seminars and talked about how his wife, when she was his bride-to-be, had these visions for her wedding, and she wanted to get married at the Carmel, California mission. It's very hard to get a spot there, but she did. She wanted to have the reception at the Pebble Beach Country Club, which is booked like 3 years in advance, but somehow there was a cancellation, and she got that. And then she wanted somebody famous at her wedding. So they got a famous singer. I don't remember who it was because I don't know popular music really well, but sounded like a famous person, I don't know. And then the famous singer canceled. And yet she still held the energy of everything that she wanted for her wedding. You know, whatever it was that a famous singer was going to bring her, this sense of joy and specialness, she just held that energy of joy and specialness. And then on the day of the wedding, they had the ceremony at the mission. They were having the reception at Pebble Beach in the event room. And the wedding planner came up to the groom and said, "Oh, sir, I need to talk to you." And he said, "Well, what's going on?" I'm thinking that something's wrong. And she said, "Oprah wants to talk to you for a minute. She's outside with Clint Eastwood. And she wants to talk to you." And what had happened is that there was this celebration of John Steinbeck, and Clint Eastwood used to be the mayor of Carmel, and Oprah's, you know, she's in the know, she knows people. So she and Clint Eastwood were playing golf, and they got to the 18th hole, and they wanted to go to the 19th hole, which is the watering hole, but it was in use for the pandemic. So Oprah said, "Well, why don't we just go in and celebrate with the bride and groom?" And he said, no, I'm kidding. He invited them in, and he just was so touched that his wife had this experience and this faith of bringing what she wanted forth into the world. You know, and I know the way that I tend to do things here, and if you don't, you'll get used to it if you ever come back again. You know, I don't necessarily, like, work really hard on manifesting things and numbers. That just gets me really messed up. I get too depressed about that. But I just work on calling forth the energy that type of center or that type of experience would require of me. And that's exactly what Esther Hicks and Abraham instructs us to do. She says, if something happens, if something like, you know, some type of disappointment, some type of failure, some type of thing that is unwanted, something like, oh, I don't know, a pandemic happens, and that is an opportunity to know what you don't want, which is a beautiful thing, because if you know what you don't want, that creates a rocket of desire, she calls it. I call it a rocket of aspiration, because to me, aspiration sort of takes the connotation of desire, which is sometimes negative, out of it. But aspiration is a holy, holy thought of what the greater yet to be. So a rocket of aspiration forms through your seeing of what is not wanted and then deciding what is wanted. You form this rocket of aspiration, and you think about what you want to experience, what it would feel like to have that, and then you start building that consciousness within yourself. What does it feel like to have a completely full church that is a center of mystical non-duality? What does it feel like to have a center where we respond, where we act upon the call of kindness? What does it feel like to have a center where we have many ministries that support all kinds of people? What does it feel like to have a center that has a global presence that reaches out and touches the world in so many ways? What does it feel like to have a center where we are in love with one another, where we are in love with God, where we are in love with humanity and the animal kingdom? What does that feel like? Do you feel good? Do you feel that? Do you feel what that feels like? Yes, right. So, absolutely. So we hold that consciousness gently, and by hold, it doesn't mean grip with our white knuckles and conclude that it has to look this way. We hold the consciousness, which is just applying gentle pressure, and mainly the pressure of opening our heart and opening our being so that we may receive it. So that we may receive it. And here's another really key point. It's not just about receiving it for us. It is receiving it for everyone. When we receive on behalf of all beings everywhere, everything opens up. We no longer know the difference between giving and receiving. We no longer know the difference between us and them. There is just one of us, and that one of us is grace. Grace-filled spirit, innocence, joy, love, peace, happiness. We are a center of love where we are love, where we share love and we serve love. If we can bring that energy into service, just think what we can do. Just think what this center can be. Just think what this life can be. Because as your life grows, this center grows. And as this center grows, your life grows. And that's what I'm talking about, where we don't know the difference, where the one is the one. There is only one. And it's operating in this beautiful Möbius strip of non-duality that just opens us up to the magnificent grace that nobody has words for, but we can feel it when it's happening. So, I'm going to close with this thought. Everything that has happened up until now has been perfect. everything that we have named bad, everything that we have concluded is bad, whether it's a pandemic or whether it's having to wear a stupid mask or whether it's some of the worst things that are happening in the world, everything is happening for the sake of perfection. And remember, the word perfection means inclusive of everything. And so we say to ourselves, this is the center that God hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. This is the mask that God hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. This is the social distancing that God hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. This is the pandemic that God hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it and recognize what it is that we want instead. This is the emptiness. This is the fullness. This is the this. This is the that that God hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. This is the church that God hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Love one another. Let us pray.